This show is what? Shoot. What do I say? Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marinez, and today we are joined by Sam and Rachel.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Rachel Galero Navarro. I'm on the things. I'm on Twitter. You can find me at Rachel_CAL_NAV. And that's mainly where you could find me. But I have a letterbox, so find me on there if you follow me on Twitter, where I talk about movies, I guess.
And I'm Sam Schultz, and you can find me at Slam Schultz on Twitter, which is the only place I really do anything at the moment.
You're also on podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I'm on SciShow Tangents podcast. I didn't know if you wanted me to plug competing podcasts.
Yeah. Competing.
I don't know if they're competing. They're different topics.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In our wildest dreams.
Yeah, we are actively fighting for the SciShow Tangents audience.
And then we're also both hosts of the podcast Real Love, which is coming back. We just recorded some episodes with Nick Jenkins, who's been on this show before, where we dissect the love stories in romance movies and like the relationships in them and if they work or not, if they're realistic or not, if they've aged well. And the first episode was really awesome and fun to record, and so look forward to those soonish.
Yeah, I'd say March.
That's not soonish.
I love it.
We've invited Sam and Rachel here today to talk about the Christmas, I don't know how to call this movie.
It's a Christmas movie.
It's a Christmas movie, I guess. It happens during Christmas, and it lasts Christmas. This is about a woman named Kate who is living in London and working at a year-round Christmas store dressed as an elf. At the beginning of the movie, she's left her parents' house, and she tries to find a place to stay with a number of friends, but we quickly find out that she's alienated a lot of those friends with, like, carelessness and selfish behavior. Somewhere along the line, Kate meets a dude named Tom outside of her shop. He convinces her to take a walk with him, and thus starts their relationship, though Tom's happy-go-luckiness extends to his claim that he doesn't use a cell phone because it distracts him from life. And because of this, Tom and Kate's dates are impromptu, and Kate doesn't always really know when she'll see him next. At one point, Kate confides in Tom that she doesn't have a place to stay, so he takes her to a homeless shelter where he volunteers. She doesn't end up staying there. She ends up going back to her parents' house, and we learn a little more about the dysfunction there. Kate is recovering from, I think, an unspecified illness. I don't think they ever really say what it is, and her mom is kind of hovering. In fact, everybody in the family, including Kate's sister, seems to be having a hard time adjusting to Kate post-illness. Things with Tom get a little more serious, and Kate talks to him about her illness and the fact that she had a heart transplant the previous Christmas, and she's felt a little off, a little half-dead is what she says since her recovery. After this confession, Kate starts putting the pieces of her life back together, eating better, volunteering for and at the homeless shelter, and repairing her relationships with the friends she alienated in the past. She also starts trying to understand her mother more. Tom seems to keep pulling just a little away from Kate, so she breaks things off only to try and find him later on to talk things out. What she finds in his apartment, though, is a realtor selling the apartment, as the previous owner, one Tom Webster, died the previous Christmas. So Kate puts everything together, and she realizes that Tom was the organ donor responsible for her new heart, and she's been dating a ghost. She sees Tom one more time, and they share a moment in which he tells her to take care of her heart. And then the movie ends with a big show Kate organized for the homeless shelter and hopeful Christmas energy.
Yay!
Wow.
So that is this movie. Uh-huh. Did you guys like it? I liked it, actually.
I didn't dislike it as much as I was expecting to, I guess.
Nice. Wow.
I didn't think it was good, but I feel like this movie is getting a lot of, like, this is the worst movie ever kind of coverage. And it wasn't the worst movie ever. It just, to me, wasn't a very good movie.
I had a
blast. I think that this movie very clearly told me what it was going to be. And I went to the theater and it delivered on every single promise, including the fact that Tom was dead. Which when I saw the trailer, I was like, damn, that dude is dead. And the movie was like, yes, he is. So I don't know. I had fun. I thought that it was well cast. And I thought that it was a little like cartoonish and like, I don't know, it had some of that humor in there, but I didn't mind it. I think it all worked pretty well together. And I walked away with the feelings that it intended to give me.
Yeah, I fully agree with that assessment. I also really liked this movie. I was incredibly charmed by it. And I think it's really interesting that at the top you weren't sure how to describe it. And like, I was very adamant about it's a Christmas movie. And I still feel that way because I think that that is important context for my feelings about this movie and like what I think that this movie was trying to do and ultimately, you know, successfully did. Like, I don't know. Like, yes, it was incredibly predictable. And also I was incredibly charmed by it. And it felt the way that I feel a Christmas movie should feel, you know, like this is the kind of movie that I can see becoming a holiday season staple for many years to come. So Sam mentioned a lot of the criticism that this movie is getting. It is mind-boggling to me that its Rotten Tomatoes score is as low as it is because I had so much fun watching it. But also, like, the complaint that I am particularly averse to is that it was predictable, which, like, in general, this is a complaint that I am particularly biased against because I just in general am suspicious of storytelling that hinges on a big unexpected twist, not because I don't think that those stories can be good or have value, but because often that happens by like not telling the story, by like not really earning the twist. And so that's just not something that appeals to me. So more often than not, when someone says that they don't like something because it was predictable, I like tune them out. But like with this movie in particular, I think that point about it setting up its promise and then delivering on it is exactly how I feel about it. But I don't know. I am curious, Sam, because you are the person who disliked it and also, I guess, the person who most agrees with most of the critics about this movie since they don't like it. What were the things that most stood out to you? Like, what, I don't know, like, what didn't you like about it?
I guess I just didn't think that it was particularly as funny as it thought it was. I didn't dislike it. I didn't dislike it as a movie. I disliked it as a comedy, I think.
That's interesting.
It was very broad, and I didn't think a lot of the like sight gags involving the Christmas store that she worked in worked very well, or just like the funny ornaments that they were showing off and the weird, like, most of the sight gags were just kind of like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be seeing or laughing at in this situation. I think another thing was that it seemed like there were so many things happening in the movie. Like, she had to deal with every single kind of issue that somebody could deal with in their life, including like Brexit. And at midway through the movie, they had set up a billion different problems for her to solve. And the thought passed my mind that the movie would never end. And I would just be sitting there forever as she was like in real time, untangling, like she was fixing Brexit and also making up with her friend who's like model ship she burned or something like that.
And solving homelessness and
homelessness for sure. It just seemed like very scattered in a way that a lot of comedies that I just kind of walk away very lukewarm from are.
Yeah.
So mostly, but I was not touched by it. I thought it was goofy and fun. I just didn't, I don't think I'd watch it again. It didn't make me laugh or anything.
See, I had the same thought as well, as like, I thought that the Santa character was such a good character. And when she's like doing a good thing for her or doing her good deed, like there's just something about that where it's just so short of a scene or so short of a moment and is like something that she checked off of her list kind of thing. And that's kind of like the embodiment of the whole movie, is that she is just checking off the things that she had wrong, the people she had wrong and the things that she did wrong off of her list. But at the same time, I feel like because it wasn't like It's not like this is like, I know this is going to be a Criterion movie in the future, or something like that. It just like allowed me to just be like, oh, this is gonna be a rom-com, and I'm okay with that. So I'm just gonna sit back and relax and laugh with the weird gags, like with the full teeth baby Jesus, and and the fact that it lit up, and like those kinds of gags, or like the wacky police officers.
I did like them.
So I think like those, I think when you like unlock the ability to just be like, well, this is gonna be a kind of a lame movie, I guess, but but like, why not enjoy the weird eccentricities that they popped up in it? And I feel like those kinds of weird gags did make me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
There's two ladies in the theater who are cracking up.
Everybody, yeah, people were pretty pleased with it in the showing that we were at.
I think the complaint about it being too sort of expansive and too broad makes sense to me in that, like, it is not a complaint that I shared, but it is at least a complaint that I get. I think that for me comes back to the sense of what I expect from a Christmas movie. Like, and so for me, I felt like it fit the scope of what this thing was, but I absolutely understand the feeling that you would have liked this movie more if it had like pared down, you know, a couple of the threads of the things that Kate was having to wrestle with.
Yeah. And it could have been, I think, a really tight, nice ghost love Christmas story. And like there were parts I really liked, like when it just showed footage of London lit up for Christmas with snow falling while playing Michael, what's his name?
George Michael.
George Michael songs. Those parts I was really into. So if it had been a whole movie, if it had just been like,
you wanted a George Michael music video.
Yeah, like one of those, like a Yule log you turn on your TV, except it's just snow and George Michael songs playing.
I talked briefly about this with my friend who is like the biggest romance fan, Jess, who has been on this podcast, and she is like not boycotting the movie, but it's what got me thinking about like what category this movie is in a first place, because for people who subscribe to the school of thought that romance has a happily ever after, this is not a rom-com. It's not,
right?
Because it does not have a happily ever after. This is more on the drama side than on the rom-com side. And then it is a Christmas movie, and I think that Christmas provides like a backdrop here, but I don't know, the fact that it was Christmas almost seems like incidental to the story that's being told. You know, it provides like music and backdrop and stuff like
that. Okay, but a ghost walks her through her life, and like a ghost helps her like decide her life. Like that is like a Christmas. Like that's that's like the most classic of Christmas stories.
I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm just saying that it was something that I think, I don't know, I think that it was enough different that it was like, I was like, what am I watching? But then it hit so many familiar plot beats that I'm like, I know what I'm watching. So it was just like a weird kind of combination of things. Like, I know that on this podcast, I have complained about things that had too much plot. And so that is like a complaint that I generally sometimes have, you know, like that's something. But here it didn't bother me because I did not have that feeling like I'm going to sit here until she solves all of these problems. It just I that never crossed my mind. Like, I knew she wasn't going to, or it was going to be the story was really like, how does she kind of get back on her feet? Not necessarily how does she fix Brexit, but just kind of this idea that this woman who's like at a low point in her life, what would be all of the things that she would be dealing with, you know, and all of the low points. And it was like pointing them all out, like her relationship with her mom, her family, her friends, and Brexit on top of all of it. And you're like, yes, I understand that it was just more like painting a picture of like the low where she was. So it never played to me like, and now we will solve all these problems. Really, where it was trying to get you was like, and Christmas! And you're like, yay! And you leave the theater. Again, that's what it gave me. So I was happy.
Okay, I want to untangle all of this, and I want to start with Kate. I will start by saying that I am incredibly grateful that we got to see Emilia Clarke in a role like this. Mm-hmm. I think like she was so badly used by Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, and I think anybody who is enough of a fan of Game of Thrones that, you know, you watched like cast interviews and stuff, uh-huh. It was never a secret that Emilia Clarke has like big goofball energy. And it was just so good to get to see her use that, you know, to see a movie that actually tried to harness that. So independent of how I feel about the character, I really enjoyed Emilia Clarke's performance as the character. Like, I think that this was a really good role for her.
I had almost the exact same thoughts while I was sitting there. Like, she must be going through a hard time, or she must have had a bad couple months. So it's good for her that she gets to just run around and wear normal clothes and just not be on a rocky island somewhere filming something that she doesn't want to do anymore.
Just barely normal clothes. She has to walk around in those.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Those wacky shoes.
She pulled off the elf shoes. She's wearing an elf costume for most of the movie, how normal, but okay.
Okay, well, I forgot about that.
According to Tom, normal is
it's a bad word, yeah.
It's a bad word.
Humble. I don't know. I would rock those elf boots that she was wearing.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like I would rock them on a normal basis.
Well, at the beginning,
she rocked them.
Yeah, at the beginning, I wasn't like, before you know that she works at a store as an elf, she's just wearing them. And at first I was like, oh, those must be costume. Like, there's going to be a reason she's wearing those boots. But then I convinced myself that maybe they were just her normal boots. And that was just what normal people wear maybe in London. And they looked pretty good.
I also enjoyed her performance. And I had that moment where I was like, damn, I was really mean to Emilia Clarke during her tenure on Game of Thrones. And then I was like, well, Maddie, you know, don't feel too bad, because she was the second worst actor on that entire show. And I stand by that assessment. But now I'm also thinking, like, maybe she didn't have great direction. Obviously, she's capable of more than what she did for a vast majority of Game of Thrones, because I think here she was very charming.
She didn't get to play a character that made a lot of goofy faces in Game of Thrones, and that is clearly where her skill set is.
I don't know. Here she's also, you know, like in her feelings and shit, and like that also worked for me too. You know, like it wasn't just the goofy stuff, though. Obviously, that I think is the best. But like, I think that she sold the bleak parts of Kate as well.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot she was in Solo. That was like her next big role, like other than Game of Thrones.
She was a little bit Daenerys-y in Solo too, though.
Yeah, and I think that maybe a goofball is definitely the right choice for her, because I think that's where her eyebrows shine. Yeah. She can do a lot of like eyebrow work.
She can move them in so many different places.
It's true. So big.
It's true. Yeah. Yes, they're very expressive.
They cover so much space.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like they go way back on her head. But I think that as a character, like Kate as a character, I think I liked her as a character, even though she was a selfish character. There wasn't a point in the movie where I was like, okay, you're fucking up. You're doing very bad. Like, there's like, I would say throughout the whole movie, I wanted to cheer her on. Like, like I knew that there was a part of this character that was selfish and that just didn't know what she was doing in her life, but she still felt the guilt and she still knew that she was in a bad place and that she still knew that she wanted to change. And maybe that kind of correlates to the fact that, was she imagining Tom this whole time? I don't know. That's a whole thing I wanted to get into. But I don't know. I think that because she was like this character that was supposed to be maybe disliked, I just never really disliked her at any point.
Yeah, I think that goes back to how charming Emilia Clarke is in the part. Like, that is the kind of thing that you need the performance to be incredibly charming in order to make it work. She is meant to be a mess that you root for anyway. She's a mess, but she's like a lovable mess. And yes, I also very much felt that way. I was always rooting for her, even as she was making bad choices. And you're like, oh no, honey, I can't wait for you to make better choices.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the bad choices she was making that was like affecting other people was out of like almost carelessness and selfishness, which is always a little easier than if your character is being malicious. And the bad choices she was making, like against herself, like eating burgers and drinking a lot, I'm like, yeah, I do that too. Yes. So, like, I want better for you, but also I am not eating kale, so
so I get it. I do love the idea though of this ghost being like, bitch, that is my heart.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It was pretty legitimately clever of them to make him upset that she was eating junk food for that reason. I like that a lot.
So when I first, so Nicole, when you told us about the episode and you're like, oh yeah, he's a ghost. And I was like, huh, I did not think about it that way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was telling Sam that when I watched the trailer, I did think it was weird. It was a weird trailer, but I also thought because like, kind of going back to what you were talking about, like ghost Christmas, I thought it was more along the lines of Angel, and which I guess could be considered the same, but
sure,
like, I feel like he was more like sent there to help her, like from not because he was dead, but because he was like an other being kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
Which also would have been more Christmassy, I guess. I don't know. How do you feel about the fact that at the end when she's realizing that he was not there the whole, or he was dead the whole time, that like when they re-approached the different scenes with Tom and Kate, that they were like, she was just there by herself. I don't know how I feel about that.
Like she was just talking to herself, or she was just,
yeah, like would it be better?
At one point she was making out with air.
Yeah, exactly. And it made me feel really sad for her.
Well, it made me feel like she should go back to the doctor probably and see.
Yeah, and so that's why I felt like they're hyping up like, okay, she was sick and she's doing all these bad things to her body kind of thing. But then it's like, okay, was she like hallucinating these? Like, why all of a sudden did she start? I don't know. I feel like that whole scene, like maybe they should just cut it out. And like, we could have just thought, oh, okay, well, he never like interacted with other people, so we can just assume like, oh yes, he was a ghost and not just like a figment of her imagination. So like maybe the I like thinking that he was actually there as a ghost but not part of her brain. It becomes like, is it her brain or is it supernatural?
I agree that the montage was unnecessary and like I could have done without it. In general, I'm just deeply ambivalent to the question of like, oh, maybe she's crazy. Like to me, it's like, I don't know, man, it's like Christmas magic. It seems pretty clear to me that the movie is not trying to suggest that that she was like crazy in any type of way. And so because it seems clear that the movie is presenting him as either a ghost or an angel, take your pick. I reject the suggestion that it matters that she accepted this so quickly. Like that is another critique that I came across is like, you know, she gets on board with this real quickly. Like, well, it's a fucking movie with like a ghost or an angel. Like, I don't know, man. And like your problem with it isn't that it's a movie with a ghost or an angel, but that she like gets on board. Like, nah, I don't care. I like super do not care. And so I don't know, but I also could have done without the montage for reasons pretty similar to the ones that you have laid out. Like it makes you think about it in a way that like, again, because I don't care. I'm like, I don't like why we didn't really need that, you know, 60 seconds of being asked to contemplate his non-presence.
Right. I didn't think necessarily she was like crazy. I just think that it turns the whole movie's idea from magic to not magic. And I feel like if he were actually there, it'd be like the magic of Christmas kind of thing. But by like showing that going back and showing the montage of her doing all these things by herself turns it into like, oh, it wasn't magic after all kind of thing.
Sure.
I think that I'm more like Sweeney. Like I'm at this place where it's like, it's a ghost. And I'm like, cool. And I'm going to accept that. I'm not going to ask what kind of ghost is it? Just, you know, I've accepted that it's a ghost. So I think that that's like pretty much all I need. And I think that what it was getting at, I don't want more information, but I think what it was getting at was not necessarily that he wasn't there. And he pretty much says, like, she asks, why can I touch you? Why are you solid to me? And it was because they shared this connection of like the same heart.
Right.
So that was like explanation enough for me. I think what the montage was trying to show was that even though those moments were real for her and she saw and touched him like nobody else could, so that was fine by me too. Like the only reason that she saw this particular ghost was because she had a piece of him, and that was fine. I was good with all of that. Like if we sat here and thought more about it, about the logistics and the physics and the I don't know, magic of ghosts, I'm sure we could poke holes in it, but I was satisfied with the hand wavy explanation that the movie gave me.
So I was also perfectly satisfied in context, but I will say that like having this conversation now, I do agree with what I think Rachel is getting at, which is that if you subtract that montage, then basically what you have is that same sort of explanation for why he's corporeal for her, but like he could still have been an insubstantial ghost that everybody else could see but not touch, you know, and that there is something, a sort of separate kind of magic to that. And like that also would have been, I don't know, like I feel like that would have been roughly the same amount of good to me.
Yeah.
But I could get on board with that, I guess is what I'm saying. Well, so speaking of Tom, we've kind of talked about the dubious quality of Tom, the nature of Tom. But aside from that, how did you guys feel about Tom as a character, independent of the questions about his the kind of character that he was?
I'm not sure. I think I still liked him as well, like even whether he was real or not, just because like he was endearing and he's like the kind of person that you would be like, you'd run into and be intrigued by because he's so like, oh, look up more, or like, you know, like I don't have a phone kind of thing. So like I think if I had met this person and just the general nature of like how he presented himself, like if I met this person, I would probably trust him.
You wouldn't go ugh.
No, I don't think I would scoff at him. I think he needs a wardrobe change, but...
Well, he's dead. He can't. It's not possible.
He can't. He's dead.
Well, he should have died in a better wardrobe when he was alive.
He died looking like Doctor Who or something.
Yeah.
Everybody, live every day like you might die in those clothes.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Clean underwear every day.
You and my mother. This is, my mother always talks about that too. It's like, what if you get like an EMT? Like, what if you get rushed to the hospital and like that kind of situation? I'm like, it's like, that's like such a wild and insane.
Same thing.
Like, mine too.
Well, wait,
this is also why she wouldn't let me go to the corner store in like pajamas, and she's like, oh, you're going out there like that with no shoes, and like, you know, I'm gonna run to I don't know where. And she's like, yeah, but right. If you get in a car accident and then the EMT sees you, and I'm like, okay, that's the least of my worries if I'm about to die.
Right, yes. If the EMT sees me, I have like 19 more concerns than like what I'm wearing. But anyway.
This must have been something they taught in like health class in the 60s or something like that.
I am so relieved to know that this is a concern that our mothers, our mothers from very different locations all shared.
Beware. Clean underwear.
Back to Tom, though. I also very much enjoyed him. I think for reasons very similar to my feelings about Kate, movies like this live and die by how charming your leads are. Yeah. And like, that's like, that is the thing that is the most essential. You can get away with a lot in your script and everything else, if as long as your leads are incredibly charming, and like none of the rest of it matters if your leads aren't incredibly charming. And I think like Henry Golding is incredibly charming. He's very good looking and very charming. And I was like, yes, great. I want to skip around the streets of London with Henry Golding.
yeah, show me cool gardens and weird statues.
He is definitely less substantial of a character, no pun intended. Like, like there's less going on there, and but that doesn't bother me, again, because he's like the Christmas ghost, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, like, he doesn't matter. He is there to, he is very literally there to advance her story, like rather explicitly in the plot, you know. Mm-hmm. the sort of classic, like the manic pixie dream girl slash boy. It's like that trope is a problem because you have this sort of non-real character who only exists to advance your protagonist. But in this case, like, the movie knows that that's what it's done. Like, it literally says, here is a non-real character who is here to advance the plot of our protagonist. Like, I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I agree.
I also agree. And I think that I saw a few reviews that were like, this movie didn't do anything new, didn't subvert anything. And I agree. But I thought it was, like, I don't know, maybe on the nose clever, but it was on the nose clever in that way that you're like, this guy is kind of weird and he never changes his clothes and she's changing his life for a guy. And then you find out that that is like his purpose is to be here and help her change her life. And you're like, yes, she changed her life for a guy. It was a ghost. It was, you know, like somebody who had an invested interest in her putting herself back together.
Because she got his heart.
Right. So I enjoyed that piece of it. I feel like I, in theory, would have scoffed at Tom and his whole, like, phones distract you thing. But it's Henry Golding, so I would have been like, you can say whatever. I will go down this dark alley with you right now.
Correct. Listen, Henry Golding can say and do that in a way that other men can't. Like, I don't know what to tell you. This is just how it is.
I think, though, it may be not enough to say that she changed her life for a guy. I think maybe it's more like she changed her life because of a guy and like for herself. Because, like, at the end, it's not like she ended up with Tom.
Right.
Like, she ended up with herself.
And he kind of doesn't even give her any indication that they will ever be in a relationship.
Right. No. Even before she knows he's dead, there's no reason for her to, you know, believe that this is an actual motivation. And I would agree with that distinction, that it's because of rather than for.
And he's never really pushy. He's not like, you should eat better. He's like, don't you want some kale? And she's like, no. And he kind of lets it drop. You know, it's like gentle nudges. He's like, there's that homeless shelter. And then, like, leaves. So it's like little hints, which I appreciated.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, he's just setting her up to feel really guilty when it turned out he was dead. Even more guilty.
Yeah, because it's like, well, you better treat my heart good or, you know.
I'll be double dead.
Yeah. I'll die in vain.
You said that it didn't do anything different, really.
Subvert.
Yes, to subvert anything. But I kind of feel like it didn't subvert anything on purpose, but I do feel like it was a weird enough movie that I was kind of like, not on the edge of my seat, but like really unsure of where it was going to go and like what kind of jokes it was going to make the whole time. Mm. So it wasn't like a boring retread of stuff. It was definitely unique in its own way.
I also really liked, and I think this is maybe a good segue into talking about the family, but I actually liked I understand why the Brexit storyline itself was like kind of ham-fisted and like, oh, look how topical we're being. Mm-hmm. But I liked that we had the sort of backdrop of her family being refugees.
Yeah.
Simply because it did a lot of narrative work very quickly and concisely. And so, like, most of Emma Thompson's screen time was actually spent being like kind of funny, but the audience understood the complexity of kind of what she had been through and that, like, you know, like why she is somewhat insufferable. Like, it's like I could look at that situation and I could understand both why she was a lot for Kate to handle and also like why she was that way, you know? So right. I don't know. I appreciated what that was doing. I didn't mind the heavy-handedness because I liked what it was there to do.
No, and I don't think I thought any of the issues, I mean, the Brexit thing obviously was heavy-handed. I don't think that any of the particular issues she was dealing with were something that like shouldn't have been covered in the movie. I just, that actually Brexit specifically and like her family's relationship with the country that they live in was something I kind of wanted to see more of. Maybe I wanted to get to know them a little bit better, and some other things distracted from time we could have spent with characters that they had introduced us to.
Right. And I think that kind of just adds to the fact that there, it was so scattered. Like there were so many, like you had her friend, you had her, you had Santa, you had the homeless shelter. Like there are so many different things. And like, really you just got like one scene with the dad, you got one or two main scenes with the mom, like the bedtime scene,
and Emma Thompson was so funny.
Yeah, Emma Thompson was great.
It is worth noting that Emma Thompson co-wrote this script, and she clearly gave herself all of the best one-liners.
Yeah, totally.
Or like the sister thing. Like I think that maybe that if they had subtracted some of the things and added more time to the family, it would have made more sense. Especially because like she had like that was the main reason why Kate was like walking around from from home to home, and why she was avoiding calls and stuff. Like I think that maybe if, and that is somewhat like the emotional climax of the movie when Kate is talking to Tom about her the reasons why she's avoiding her mom and stuff. But I think that maybe if some of those reasons, or at least a little bit more information, had become more clear earlier in the movie, then we would understand her relationship more with her parents or her family. If we were to fine tune this movie, I think those are the kinds of things that I would like to see.
I do agree that I think the Marta storyline, that's the sister, was, that for me was one of the few, like one of the problems that I think was introduced in a way that I was like, I don't know, this is like very quick and we're actually not really dealing with this adequately. The bit where she outs Marta and like, I don't know, like there's like a whole lot going on there that I didn't actually feel like the movie dealt with. Like their whole sibling dynamic was one of the places where I definitely would have liked more. And I agree that I think you could have subtracted some of the friend storylines in favor of that. But
yeah, like maybe it replaced the friend storyline with her going to stay with her sister instead. And like you have an extra scene.
Totally. If that plot line had been her at Marta's instead. Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree.
I will just add that I really, really liked the part of the story that was about her family being refugees, mm-hmm. and kind of her rejecting part of her identity, and that being kind of very mixed in with her whole, like she's lost herself. And part of that is her, like, you know, rejecting this part of her identity. I think that the Brexit thing is interesting to me because if you were going to do that story and then set it in, you know, current times and then not address it, you know, that if you're talking about like anti-immigrant sentiment and you're just gonna like not say anything about that, I think that could have played one way where people would have said something, and then if you do address it, then you date your movie and then it's a right. little ham-handed. Yeah. But I don't think there's any winning there necessarily. But I agree that it did a lot of characterization, and it could have been a thing where if, you know, Kate's complaint about her mother is that like she's hovering, she's singing me to sleep, and things that could have made Kate look really bad. But then you add like not only the generational gap and like the whole thing between mothers and kids and, you know, parents just don't understand, but then you add the like the separation of being like a first generation to wherever your country is or whatnot, right. being immigrants or whatever. And I think that that fills in so many gaps, even at the end where she's singing like the sad song and the dad's like, it's Christmas. Like there's such a, you know, it's a disconnect between culture that informs a lot of the story. And mm-hmm. those stories are always going to hit
right in the feels of this first generation American. So I was like all about it the whole movie. So I would leave that in. I agree, though, if you're going to take something out, probably the friends and or the sister, even though sibling feels is also something that also, always I'm in the bag for. But probably needed like one less plot.
They waited so long to show you the pregnant friend and her husband again that when they popped up, I was like, oh, yeah, they were in this movie like an hour and a half ago.
Right. Yes. While I was watching it, I was thinking, I was like, I bet Mari's having like, this is my shit thoughts and feelings right now. And then you confirmed.
On the bus, when she like, you know, somebody is being mean to the two people speaking another language on the bus. And then she like immediately speaks to them. I was like, oh my gosh, I could like, I don't know. It honestly probably gave me the most feelings in this entire movie about a girl and her dead boyfriend was.
So the first generation feelings.
Yeah. Brand is strong.
So speaking of immigrant characters, we got to give some major love to Santa, who is my actual favorite character in this movie. I fucking love Santa. Michelle Yeoh is dope. I also love that, like, as an aside, one of the like selfish and terrible things about Kate is that it never occurred to her that Santa wasn't her real
name.
That was
so weird.
And then she goes on to explain her different names for the different places she worked.
Yeah, and that was great. But that Emilia Clarke never stopped and thought about that, like, her parents didn't name her so that she would open a Christmas store in 40 years or whatever.
It also took me a moment to realize that she kept calling her Santa and then being like,
it was confusing at first.
Wait, she's calling her Santa because that's her name?
It was a very strange joke. Yeah.
The first time she was like, Santa, get down here, I was expecting like a man in a red suit, because she does it in like an elf costume. So I was like, there's also a Santa here. And then here comes Michelle Yeoh. And I was like, what I expected.
I love it. And I loved her weird, like, C-plot romance. That was also like, I don't know. I loved it. The weirdness of it. I was here for it.
I thought that guy was going to be a ghost too, kind of. He seemed like that scene when he shows
definitely
up.
Definitely way weirder than Tom. So, I get it.
Yeah, once you start adding sauerkraut man to the picture.
Yeah, maybe you need to take a step back and think about the choices you're making. Yeah. But
no, those were all good choices. I stand by every choice they made with regard to Santa. I love every part of Santa's, the way that Santa is written and portrayed. She's the best part of the movie.
I've been pro everything so far on this podcast, but I will say that the Santa and her love interest parts were very not funny to me. The way that they all played, and it was like on purpose, they were like hamming up the whole like stupefied in love thing. I don't know why I was like not about it. I loved Santa as a character. It was specifically those interactions. And the other moment that gave me the most feel is when like after the break-in, where she's like, clean up your mess, you stupid girl. I was like, oh no, Michelle Yeoh is mad. I don't like it.
Now you've really fucked up.
Yeah.
You've upset Michelle Yeoh. So
yeah, she's definitely one you don't want to cross.
I also want to give a shout out to the two police officers who were also like, why were they there? Because they were funny. That's it. That's the entire reason they were in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. I appreciated it. I don't have a problem with them only being in this movie to be funny. I do agree with the general sense that maybe there were a few too many things going on in this movie, even if none of them bothered me. but if you were trying to subtract things from this movie, again, I think the first thing I'd shove in front of you is the friends. I'd be like, take them first. Yeah. That's fine. But the police officers, I would hold on to them for a bit. I'm not sure what else I'd give you after the friends, but the police officers were pointless, but funny.
Yeah. I think their most impactful scene was after the break-in, and that was also their funniest scene. And you could keep that in a lot of different versions of the movie, I think.
Right, that's true.
They're pretty safe.
Yeah, I would agree. The whole... When they say, when the grumpy cop says, "Have a Merry Christmas," as a Jason Statham character,
yes,
was probably one of my favorite lines of the movie. I'm approving their
continued existence.
Yeah. Good. I love the idea of us just like running through the movie and like voting yes or no on like different...
Swipe right.
Yeah. I feel like I'm the worst movie critic in the world, because once I sit down and talk about a movie for like a couple minutes, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe that was the best movie ever made, and I was just wrong about it. Because now I like it. Because now I like it a lot better.
I think I wish that there were more George Michael in it. Like,
oh, interesting.
Like, maybe like
there was quite a bit of George Michael.
Yeah, there was quite a bit.
Like, there was music in it. Like, his music was, it was like pretty much all him.
Yeah.
But I think maybe like, because it was named after a song,
right.
Like maybe if she had mentioned it at one point, just
she did at the very beginning and has a sticker, yeah, that says George Michael rules or something.
No, it's like, yes, George Michael forever.
Yeah.
I think maybe if like that were added to her character,
made her character a bigger and more pronounced George Michael fan.
Yes. Yeah. She could have had a George Michael t-shirt or something.
Yeah, like that's a George Michael t-shirt, or like if you... I don't know.
All right, I accept this.
I don't know anything about how this movie came about at all, but I would like to always imagine that somebody was listening to Last Christmas, which has been stuck in my head since I watched this movie.
Correct.
And
yes,
just got to "I Gave You My Heart" and was like, light bulb. What, yep, if?
Dope. What if it
someone
literally
gave you, yes, their heart last Christmas?
I feel very confident that that is exactly how this movie came, yeah, about.
Like, had to be.
That is 100% the origin story of this movie. Sam, I also deeply relate to that. This isn't like universally true, but I think that a version of that is a thing that has happened across the entire, I don't know, history of this podcast, except where Mari and I play almost opposite roles, which is to say that we come on and I dislike, anytime I dislike something, and she's like, no, here's why it's good. I'm like, you're right, that is good. And then the opposite is true, where she comes, uh-huh, on and she likes something and I'm like, no, here's why it's bad. She's like, you're right, it's bad.
Yeah.
And that's like our dynamic.
We're gonna just retitle this podcast to "Here's Why You're Wrong."
Wait, I just realized something. George Michael died on Christmas 2016.
He died on Christmas Day?
Yes.
Which would be the day that
she got her heart.
That she got her heart. And that he died, that Henry Golding died.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to put that.
Yeah.
Little,
yeah,
nugget.
We're just going to put that out there. I don't really have like the time or the brain space to like process what that means, but yeah. We'll put that out there, because that brings us to the end of this episode. So, thank you so much to Sam and Rachel for joining us, and thank you to all of you for listening. If you are enjoying this podcast, we would really appreciate it if you joined our community on Patreon at patreon.com/snarksquad, or rate and review the podcast, or tell your friends about it. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com, so you can tell us all of your thoughts on this movie and on what it means that George Michael died the same day as Henry Golding's character. Or you can find us all on Twitter at snark_squad. You can find me at Sweeney Says.
I'm at My Name Is Marines.
At Rachel_Kyle_Nav.
And at Slam Schultz.
This show is produced by me and Mari. It is edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Chin. We will be back in your feed again next week. Bye.
Bye.